Hello, and welcome to the very first global edition of Awin Talks, the affiliate marketing podcast. My name's Rob Davidson, content analyst at Awin, and I'm your host. And I'm joined by my fellow colleagues, Kevin Edwards.
Hello.
Awin's global client strategy director, and also Craig Foster.
Hello.
Data analyst from our business intelligence team. This year, Awin is launching a series of local podcasts from across many of its territories around the world, where you can listen to insights about these local markets and how affiliate marketing is operating there. We've already launched Awin Talks podcast in both the Nordics and the Netherlands, and you'll find a selection of those episodes now live to listen to on each of those local Awin sites. This podcast, though, has a global focus. Each month, we'll be discussing some of the biggest news items in the global affiliate industry and wider digital market, as well as interviewing key figures from across the industry for the views and perspectives on these issues and more. Over the course of this series, we'll also aim to provide you with some of the latest network trends that we've spotted thanks to our data team and discuss some of the newest and most interesting affiliates that have joined the network with our publisher services team. All in all, it should amount to a pretty comprehensive roundup of the current state of play in affiliate marketing, and we hope you'll tune in regularly to listen. For our debut episode, our main interview is with Adam Ross, Awin's Chief Operating Officer. I'll be talking to him shortly about his thoughts on the current state of play in the affiliate market and to find out more about Awin's objectives in the coming months and years. Craig will then take over the interviewing responsibilities when he poses questions to myself and Kev later on the recently launched new and improved edition of the Awin Report for 2018. But before all that, in what I hope will become a regular feature of the podcast, we're going to have a quick roundtable chat about some current news topics that have caught our eye recently. So, Kev, I know you wanted to kick things off with a quick mention of the newly published affiliate marketing study in the UK.
Yeah, so very recently, a couple of weeks ago, we published this year's numbers. So this is the sixth year that we have been collating the numbers from across the industry. So we do this in conjunction with the Internet Advertising Bureau and PwC. We start collecting the numbers at the start of the year. And I think this year we wanted to do something a bit different because generally the online performance marketing study has only really looked at affiliate and lead generation. But I think that we felt that the performance space has become so generic and so all-encompassing now that to actually call it the performance marketing study and also capture some of the data points that we were meant that it was becoming sort of quite generic and unfocused. And what we really wanted to do was go back to basics, really, and just understand really what the affiliate channel was worth rather than the wider performance space. So we actually measured less this year, so the numbers were smaller. But looking at it from a year-on-year comparison point of view, we saw a 14% increase in year-on-year advertising spend within the affiliate space, coming in at over £500 million being spent on the channel, about £9 billion in revenue being generated. So still some really impressive numbers. Couple of things to bear in mind. We didn't this time round include gambling, which we think probably accounts for an additional £250 million in spend.
And what was the reasoning behind that?
I think that a lot of that data is modelled, so it's very difficult to get accurate data from some of the sectors. And I think another thing as well that we were conscious of with previous versions of the OPM is that we were getting to the stage where the vast majority of the data was being modelled or estimated, and we wanted to go to something that was a bit more definitive. So this time around, as I say, whilst we're measuring less, about 80 to 90% of it is actually submitted data, so from networks and SaaS platforms. And so we know that obviously the data is far more accurate. And as I say, we are measuring less, but I think that it actually is more definitive in some respects and more authoritative in other aspects as well because of that. This year we haven't included lead generation. Again, it's difficult to get some of those companies to submit the data. So it is very much a pure play affiliate study. There's some additional detail within there as well. So you can find out how the revenue is split between sectors. You can also find the ROI numbers, the ROI coming in at a pretty impressive £16 in revenue for every £1 spent. And then the final thing, probably just to mention on it, is that every year the IAB, when they release their ad spend numbers, also conduct a survey, a YouGov survey, where they go out to several thousand UK consumers and they ask them questions around just their kind of digital behaviour and e-commerce behaviour. And in we're always lucky in that we get a few questions as a channel. And one of them was around understanding what types of activity that typically sit within the affiliate channel that consumers interact with. So how frequently they use cashback sites, vouchers, things like that. And again, all of those numbers were pretty positive year-on-year growth. So all of that really, I think, helps to contextualize more generally, more widely, when we're looking to take the affiliate message to people that don't necessarily work within the channel. It helps to kind of put some flesh on the bones, really, about actually how affiliate marketing is really powerful and capable of getting in front of consumers on a pretty regular basis.
Yeah, I think it'd probably be pretty interesting to see if any other countries take this kind of approach up as well. Because obviously in the UK, they've been doing it now for around, as you say, 6 years. So I think, you know, it would be interesting to see if the likes of, you know, Germany and the US perhaps would take up these kind of studies.
There's definitely an appetite to do it in the US. I've spoken to a couple of people there who are trying to coordinate something in conjunction with the Performance Marketing Association. So I don't know what the latest status of that is, but it is definitely something that is viewed by other countries as something that they also want to have in their local territories as well. Because as we know from the work on the AWIN report, it's actually really difficult to find any global numbers around the size of the channel.
Well, I mean, that all sounds like it's fairly positive right now for the affiliate industry, and that points towards kind of future growth potentially. However, there is obviously another subject on the horizon that could have a big impact upon digital advertising and how that performs, and that would be GDPR, Craig.
Yes, yeah. So obviously coming up to the deadline day for GDPR, when it's going to be kind of launched in a way, comes into an effect on Friday this week, the 25th of May. And, you know, those who've been kind of following the GDPR since its conception, I suppose, will probably find a little bit of relief come Friday, not least so they can see how, you know, the initial landscape kind of plays out with this. AWIN, we're releasing our white paper this week as well, based on this, and that kind of, again, reiterates AWIN's position and its different legal base and the legal basis of which we are approaching it with. There's also useful things in the white paper around data flow, everything that we track, everything that we've released so far as well. So a lot of content that we've released on GDPR as well. It's 21 pages long, so it's quite extensive, but I think it's quite a useful piece of information that we can point a lot of people to, even if we're just picking parts out of it. More importantly, it's kind of an overarching guide to the GDPR as well. And some of the founding principles in there, you know, around data minimization and things like that as well. It also has information on our consent banner changes as well, because, of course, the things around PECA and the cookie changes that we need to make for publishers. So we'll be releasing that as well this week, and some guide with that within the white paper.
Yeah, I think the key thing that we're trying to push as a network is that whilst we're not going down the consent route for GDPR and we don't require our affiliates to obtain consent under GDPR, it's really easy to confuse consent under GDPR with cookie consent under the Privacy Directive. And the white paper does go into quite a lot of detail about the differences between those and about why we as a network are focusing more on cookie consent under e-privacy. And that actually isn't anything that's particularly different. We've required that since the Privacy Directive came in 2012. That's always been part of our terms and conditions, which we've also just updated for publishers. It's just that under GDPR, which points to the Privacy Directive from a cookie perspective, what consent looks like for cookie consent has actually changed. It's been strengthened. It talks about sort of freely given, unambiguous consent, and that's a significant change. Where it's problematic is that because it's still an e-privacy directive, it's been transposed into local EU nations' laws in different ways. So if you take the Dutch, for example, they have a particularly stringent application of the e-privacy directive. So actually, from their perspective, it's probably not that much different. From a UK perspective, it is different. Other markets don't necessarily have to worry about it. So the transposition and the position of those different nations means that it's not a straightforward approach, certainly for businesses who are active in multiple territories. So we go into lots of detail about that because it's really important, I think, people understand those two differences. And we're also in the position, obviously, of not having the final version of what the e-privacy regulation will look like, and that's unlikely to come into place for about another year or so. So we're kind of working, operating on two levels. You've got the GDPR level and the e-privacy directive level. So it's really important that people understand that. So I definitely recommend reading that white paper that's available from our GDPR hub, which you can find on our website.
I think you can appreciate just why there's so much confusion around the subject right now, given the different layers of regulation that are involved in it. But I wanted to focus just on something that's a little more local, locally oriented, which is it's published around about a month or so ago now by the House of Lords Select Committee here in the UK. And for those listeners outside of the UK, I'm familiar with the House of Lords. It essentially acts as a political forum which scrutinises and challenges the work of government and debates and advises on issues of national interest to the wider population. Now, this particular report that was undertaken by this select committee was focused on the UK digital advertising industry, and that's because of various issues that have cropped up in the media and have gathered momentum in the media's kind of representation of that industry. And so it's something that I decided to take a bit more of a delve into, an in-depth look at, and to actually read through. And to be honest, I anticipated that it would be fairly misinformed, given that the membership of the select committee itself was made up by people such as the Viscount Coville of Culross or Lord Goodlad himself. But I have to say that actually it was pretty well informed, and I would definitely recommend it to listeners to check out. So it goes into great detail about the setup of the internet advertising industry, and focuses in on a whole wide range of issues and matters that are currently dogging it, from ad fraud and transparency to the regulation and whether or not self-regulation is a better approach to looking after the online ad industry as it currently stands. One of the interesting aspects that I thought was particularly worth focusing on was relating to transparency in the channel and how media spend is being attributed by certain publishers and advertisers operating together. And it really emphasized the amount of ad tech vendors that are operating in the system right now. There was a particular example that they gave from The Guardian News and Media as a publisher, and they reported to the select committee themselves and told them that they had actually conducted tests to purchase their own ad inventory to see how an advertiser's money is actually being spent across that value chain, and found that in the worst cases, just 30 pence from every pound that was being spent by that advertiser was being received by the publisher themselves. Now, in the report themselves, they've actually illustrated an example of exactly what that value chain looks like, and they give an example of how that that pound would be split in terms of spend across all those different ad tech intermediaries and ad tech vendors. And this is something that I kind of focused on within a talk that I did at Affiliate Huddle just last week. And that was, I think, something that was particularly worth sharing, because I don't think it's always apparent. And as far as affiliate marketing is concerned, I think it does put it in a good light to some degree, because there is a kind of streamlined relationship there between publishers and advertisers that is mediated by just kind of maybe one or possibly two partners or something like that.
I think it really taps into that sort of zeitgeist around Mark Pritchard from Procter & Gamble saying at the start of 2017 about how the whole landscape, digital marketing landscape, was opaque, and there was no clarity or transparency around where the money was being spent, who was benefiting from it, all of these different vendors that are involved in a kind of, you know, this complex value chain, if you like. And there is a massive opportunity, I think, for affiliate marketers to really kind of push home how transparent and accountable the channel is. And so I think it's really important that we both understand what is being said in the wider context here, because, you know, these aren't people who have any probably very little, if any, knowledge of or existence of the affiliate channel. And it's really important that we put the appropriate context of the affiliate channel against some of these other channels that are being talked about, predominantly programmatic and display.
Now it's time for our main interview. Each month we'll be interviewing someone from across the industry to find out their opinions, thoughts and perspectives on the affiliate channel. So for our first main interview for the Awin Talks podcast, we're interviewing Adam Ross, who is Awin's Chief Operating Officer. Hi, Adam.
Hi, Rob.
How are you?
Good. How are you?
Good. Cheers. Yeah, enjoying the sunny weather today.
Good.
So I wanted to kind of get some personal context, I guess, in your relationship with the affiliate industry to begin with, and just start off by asking you how you got started off in affiliate marketing originally, and also what it was that attracted you to the industry as well.
Sure. So it's an unusual story. I won't bore you with the whole of it, but I actually studied dentistry at university.
Okay.
That didn't work out.
That's a natural progression, obviously.
Absolutely. Yeah. That didn't work out, which is probably good news for anybody's mouths I got anywhere near. But then I ended up pursuing what was really my passion, which was the internet and business. And I'd been building websites and playing around online for a long time. And so when I moved down to London in 2004, I looked for a job in those areas, and purely by chance, purely by luck, I came across what was then Affiliate Window, and I met the founder, Kevin Brown, and persuaded him to actually interview me, because I had no experience, real experience in the space. And I met him, and he gave me a chance and he gave me a job, and I started off doing technical integration at Affiliate Window back then, when we were based in Deptford. And there was about 15 to 20 of us at the time. And what drew me to it was just that brilliant mix of technology and business combined. And from the moment I joined, I really loved it. It's something I really felt passionate about. And the rest is history. I've never looked back.
Yeah. So, I mean, that's obviously quite some time ago now. And I mean, what would you say have been the biggest change, or the one biggest change that you've seen in the industry since you became involved in it?
Yeah, I mean, I think there's been enormous changes since then. If I were to summarize it, I would say the biggest change has just been the increased level of professionalism. It's always been a great industry full of passionate people. But since that time, significantly more money has come into it. There's been significantly more interest from major advertisers. And if we look across the world now, there's probably very few companies that don't actually run an affiliate program. And I think that influx of interest and investment massively increased the professionalism and sophistication of what it is that we do. And I think as we sit here today, we have a really brilliant and vibrant industry, which is well supported by, as I say, every major company in the world, and a whole raft of publishers and interesting businesses. And that makes for a brilliant and vibrant community and a very exciting place.
I mean, networks themselves have obviously played a huge role in popularizing the model across the advertising world. And I wondered kind of what your view was on the role of networks and how that's changed over time.
I think networks are playing a more active role than ever before now. What we see, I think, in the market is an increased demand for the service and the advice that we offer. And that's evidenced by the growth that we're seeing. I think there's it can be a complex space, and it's a complex environment to operate in. And I think both on the publisher and the advertiser side, the role of network has to be to reduce that complexity, to make it easier for everybody to play a part in the industry. And I think networks do a great job of that. I think in the past, we also did that. But as time has gone on, that advice and that service has become increasingly sophisticated, and that's yielded amazing results. And so, you know, the natural progression of that is to increase the level of sophistication of the service and to improve it and to add more to it. And I think and that's what we've done at AWIN, but I think other networks have done the same thing as well, invested a lot in service, and that's sort of allowed us incredible client retention, but also it's enabled some of the most sophisticated affiliate programs to emerge. And I think what we see today now, if we look at some of the top programs in our main markets, you know, the activity that they do and the work that they do and the insight that we give them and that they act on is of such a high standard compared to what it was in the past. It's really great to see, and it drives excellent results for everybody involved.
Mm. So, I mean, looking specifically at Affiliate Window as it was and AWIN as it is now, that specific network, I mean, you've overseen the merger of a local UK network in the guise of Affiliate Window, and that was with the pan-European platform Zanox. Mm. And more recently, we've seen the company's rebrand as AWIN, which has now seen it acquire additional partners in AffiliateNet and ShareASale. And that gives it a huge global reach for the first time. And I wondered, kind of from that perspective, what have you learned about the regional differences in affiliate marketing across?
It's an interesting one. I think where we started our journey in the UK, you have a quite unique environment. I think the UK market is particularly sophisticated, and that's because the population in the UK are very comfortable with buying online, and they have been for a long time. The infrastructure, although certainly by no means the best in the world, is good enough, more than good enough, to support e-commerce, and so everybody can shop online, and they do. Something else that I think is unique about the UK is the concentration of activity in one city, in London, which breeds this community of digital marketing experts that spur each other on, that drives quite intense competition, and so you end up with a very sophisticated market, sophisticated solutions. And the other aspect is, I mean, one of the prerequisites for affiliate marketing to be successful in any country is the need for a business environment that allows for entrepreneurialism. And I think the UK certainly has that. The US has that, and so you get a nice variety of publisher businesses that contribute to the ecosystem and make for a very sophisticated solution. So that's certainly what's unique about the UK. I think in the other markets, it hasn't developed in the same way. And so certainly early on, there was a greater reliance on other types of digital marketing that were sitting inside the affiliate channel. So you have predominance of more, let's say, display-based models. But that's changing, and as more publishers come to the fore, you see less reliance on display and a more diverse publisher mix in those markets. And it's no surprise that you see that developed in Germany and France as the other two major European markets. And the US is obviously, it has that great mix and a huge e-commerce environment. But what I would say is that uniqueness of London and the UK tends to just drive a bit more fierce competition that makes the solutions or the companies that play in the space have to work harder for business. And so it drives a little bit of something extra that gives the UK an advantage there. But I think what we're seeing now generally across the board is affiliate marketing is in rude health in almost every market it's in. And as AWIN, we see great things happening everywhere now, and that makes it even more exciting an industry to be in, because it's really truly a global industry now.
Yeah, I think that's quite interesting, actually, that idea that almost geographic proximity can play a really massive role in terms of developing a culture and
an industry when we were researching the Australian market, for instance.
I think that's absolutely right, and so much about our success as an industry comes from community. Community is the most powerful when they're close to each other. It obviously exists in the US in a big way. There's this fantastic vibrant affiliate community there, but it's very hard for them to get together, and it culminates in what happens at affiliate summits in Vegas and New York. But in London, it probably happens more regularly. And I think, by the way, that's back to a previous question you asked about the role of networks. I think the support of that community and the investment in it is something that networks do a lot of and should be praised for. And I think if that were to fragment or become more disparate, then we would be in a worse place. And so, certainly we take that responsibility seriously. And we're going to continue to invest in that community because we think it yields good results. I think it could be even more together, and we could achieve even greater things if we could come even closer. But we also shouldn't underestimate that the closeness that already exists is incredibly powerful and useful and drives things forward.
I guess that kind of leads quite nicely into my next question, which was, where do you see the main benefits lying in offering a global affiliate platform, so something that is almost universalized and standardized? When Awin was obviously expanding, what were the main advantages that you really kind of thought that were going to vote by that?
I think one of the great things about affiliate marketing, and we see this, in the analysis that we do and the stats that we produce, we're doing sales in over 180 countries around the world, and the affiliate channel can act as, it shouldn't ever be the sole route to market, but it can act as a route to market for companies that want to expand beyond their domestic confines, and it can be a nice way to test whether their products and their services can work in other markets. And we wanted to be an enabler for that, but it's very hard to be a nice, seamless enabler of that if you're operating on multiple platforms and technologies. So our aim was to make it easy for people to do that, not just to expand, but if they're already present in those markets, to take advantage of that and to have some level of consistency in how they approach that. Now, the differences between the markets still exist, so it's hard to achieve total consistency. But at least if you're using the same technology, you're getting as near as a seamless service as we can possibly deliver. You can expect the same service from the provider in different markets. You can expect the same reporting and insight and general rules of operation. Then that helps a lot, and it takes away a lot of the stress and hassle involved in looking at other markets, and you can rely on the trust and the longevity of that relationship that exists to do it. And so that's what we're trying to achieve. That's we've come a long way in achieving, and I think there's definitely more to do there. But we think it's a big advantage and a very important thing in today's market to be able to say to clients, you can do it. You can do affiliate marketing with us in almost every country, and we'll do a good job for you, and you'll understand it, and it'll be done with the same level of care, attention, ethics, sophistication.
Yeah, I mean, that's obviously a huge project. What do you think have been some of the kind of biggest practical difficulties that you've had to overcome in terms of trying to make that a reality?
Yeah, I mean, it's a massive job on many, many different levels. Different companies have different cultures and different ways of doing things, and you have to be sensitive towards that and try and find, try and come out with the best of both. And that is intense, and that requires a great deal of care and sensitivity. A lot of what makes a company is its culture and the way it works together, and it takes time to harmonize that. And that's a lot of the work. That's the bulk of the work, because I think if you can get that right, then the other things flow from that. And so we've always focused on making sure that we get that bit right. And I think in the latest, we regularly do employee engagement surveys, and in the latest survey, 88% of people said they believe they would recommend Awin as a great place to work. And that's something that that proves that we're at least doing that right. I think then you've got the other practical challenges that come with it. Bringing technology platforms together is you know, is no mean feat. You know, there's again different platforms do things in different ways. The different coding languages. You're trying to bring it all together while still maintaining the business. And you know, it's changing the wheels while the car is still in motion. Is the phrase we often use. You know, when we talk about this as a board, and you know, you're bound to hit problems. The challenge is how you react to those and how you recover from those. And so far, so good. I mean, we haven't. It hasn't been total plain sailing. But in the main, things are going very well, and we're approaching the end of the first major project, which is the coming together of, say, the old affiliate window and Xanox, which we've called the Helix program. That's reaching an end soon, and then we have another project with integrating AffiliateNet, which is just starting.
I wanted to change tack slightly now, and I mean, if we look at the wider digital ad industry at the moment, it's obviously taken quite a bashing. There's been a lot of scrutiny. So, you know, if you consider things like the Cambridge Analytica scandal at the moment, and the fallout for that for Facebook, ad viewability concerns in display have dogged that for quite some time now. And it seems like the wider industry is really under a lot of scrutiny. I wondered how well insulated you think that the affiliate marketing industry is from a lot of these issues that are currently in such headlines.
Affiliate marketing has had its trials and tribulations, and the industry did a lot in the early days to address that. And I think it's been largely successful in addressing that. And if you look across the industry now, I think most networks have major compliance teams. There are companies in the space that are specifically dedicated to protecting it and making sure that it's clean. And I think other channels have really got away lightly. The level of transparency that we offer is sometimes a bit of a blessing and a bane, because we do stand accountable for this stuff, and we do a lot, whereas other channels seem to and there's all sorts of activity going on there that's only just emerging, and they haven't done enough to address it. There's another, I mean, great thing about affiliate marketing is that the vast majority of business done in the space is on a pure CPA basis. So the advertising has to work, otherwise no one gets paid, and that's an incredible self-regulatory mechanism that just underpins everything that we do. Yes, other channels are all working back to a CPA, but they're not paid on a CPA. It's a very different thing. But what people often underestimate is that beyond that incredible self-regulatory mechanism is another, and that's the validation period. So, you know, a user has to, let's say, receive the service or the product, like it, be happy with it, not return it within a period for the publisher to get paid for the sale. And I think those two mechanisms really insulate the affiliate market from the same scrutiny that's happening in other channels, and put us in a very strong position today when it comes to, you know, compliance and making sure that the relationship that the consumer has with the ad is a good one. And I think that we're in a great place for that, and we should take advantage of that now as an industry, that strong position that we hold, and I think that we will.
Here's a question that I'm sure you've never been asked before. GDPR, is it a good or a bad thing for the affiliate industry? Ideally you'd elaborate more than just a one-word answer.
Yeah, I mean, I think that first of all, is GDPR a good thing, full stop, or question mark? And I think that it is. I think that giving consumers control of their data and making them really understand the deal that they're doing when they use services on the internet that are free, I think is absolutely critical. And if it's applied correctly, it could have a very positive effect on the digital industry as a whole. But I'll reserve judgment until we see how it is applied. Because at the moment, the one concern that we should all have as an industry is the dominance of the big American players, creating monopolies in the digital industry, and I think this regulation has the potential to address that. If you look at some commentators in the States, they're sort of looking to Europe and GDPR as a potential solution to this problem, and you know, watching very closely. The challenge comes when the people who create the regulation don't necessarily have the same or as sophisticated an understanding of how online advertising works to make this a good thing. And And I hope that as it rolls out and as we start seeing it being implemented, that we see that side of it, and that, you know, we see the positive side of it, and it does get implemented correctly. And so then, is it a good thing for the affiliate industry? I think again, it could, you know, just like the previous question, we are in a strong position. I really feel that we are. And there's some complication and ambiguity about how it should be implemented. And that's, I suppose, only natural given it's brand new. But because of the way affiliate marketing works, and because the advertising that we do in the vast majority of cases is considered good by the consumer, otherwise they would return the goods, otherwise they wouldn't purchase from it, that puts us in a good place. And if we can get our interpretation of it correct, you know, we can do it right, then I think it puts us in a very strong position against other advertising channels.
I mean, I think GDPR will obviously set quite a precedent for the wider digital industry and the direction in which it moves over the next few years. Given that, where do you think that the affiliate industry is kind of moving in the future? And specifically, I guess, how does that fit with Awin's own kind of future plans and objectives?
I think what I mentioned before about those big US companies creating a monopoly in this space, I think that's something that we as an affiliate industry can have a very powerful response to. People might think, oh, that's quite lofty or ambitious, but I genuinely believe it, because we're a collective of advertisers and publishers and solutions, all working together very successfully, all helping each other out, all driving sales for each other in a nice virtuous circle. And that, as I said, you know, that community can become very powerful if it comes together in the right way and it focuses its mind and attention on what is the real threat in the market. And everybody needs to be aware of that threat and come together to do something about it. And that's what we're going to try and enable. That's what we certainly see as part of our future as a network in the space. And if we can focus everybody's minds on that, I think we can do some great things and become very powerful, and a very powerful alternative to those big guys.
And then finally, looking at your own personal kind of career within the industry, what would you say is the one achievement that you're most proud of during your time working?
It's very hard to identify one. I think, you know, one of the things that definitely fills me with pride is, obviously, when I started in 2004, we had, as I said, 15 to 20 people. You know, we were the third or fourth largest in the UK at the time, debatable, but we were fighting for more, and we were fighting for growth. And then since then, through natural organic growth and a series of acquisitions and mergers and whatever else, we find ourselves here today with 1,200 people across the world. And, you know, we as a board, we visit all our offices at least once a year, and we meet all those people, and we see the great work that they're doing. And what fills me with pride is just the sense that this company supports all those people, their careers, their lives. And generally speaking, people like working here, and that's the environment that we wanted to create. You know, we come to work with great passion, and we love what we do, and it's amazing to see other people that feel the same. You know, that just makes coming to work a great pleasure, and it helps you to do amazing things. And I think everybody within the company is doing great work at the moment, and we are achieving amazing things, and that is probably the biggest source of pride.
Great. Well, thank you for your time, Adam. And hopefully maybe at some point in the future we might get you to come back and we'll do another little interview with you.
Be a pleasure.
Great.
Yeah.
Cheers.
Thanks.
So now I'm going to ask Rob and Kev a little bit about the Awin report, which was a report we released initially last year. Around September, October time, and it was the first kind of global piece on affiliate marketing. So all the regions that Awin operate in, we did some analysis on those regions and basically kind of gave a scope of each market and how the affiliate market itself operates within that region. So yeah, Kev, why have you launched a new version so soon after the first one?
So, well, as you mentioned, we released it late last year, and we felt that really to get the most out of it, that we would sort of have a bit of a reboot of it. So the new version does have new content in it. It's predominantly the same content from last year, but we've also updated, taken the opportunity to update. I think Rob's going to mention some of the new content that's in there. But yeah, we wanted to get a full year's worth of value out of it. So we relaunched it just at the start of the year. And, you know, we've taken on board lots of feedback from the initial version. We've put some new pieces in, new pieces of information in. And then, you know, the plan is now Rob and I are just starting to work on next year's so that we can get the next Avon report out at the start of next year.
So, so Rob, then, what new content have you included in this edition?
So this year's edition is a lot bigger, a lot thicker, and the actual report itself is a lot heavier. So that's always an ideal objective. But this year we've actually included our predictions for 2018, which are obviously, it's a few months have gone by now, but we've included our 9 predictions that we had for the year ahead in the affiliate industry, which took into account a lot of kind of wider industry trends and what was happening in the wider digital market and how that might have consequences for affiliates.
Have any of them come true yet?
Not yet. Fingers crossed. Well, I mean, fingers crossed the good ones will. Yeah. So, yeah. And we've also updated a lot of the data within the actual report itself, particularly... there's a chapter called The Importance of Global Retail Events, and that focuses in a lot on Black Friday, particularly in the network trends that we spot there. Because last year's edition was published kind of in Q4, but prior to us really getting visibility on how Black Friday had performed in 2017 and also how Christmas had performed as well, which are two huge retail events globally, which are always useful to witness and to gauge kind of performance. So that's now been updated with all of the new data. And alongside that, we have 3 new case studies from 3 of our prominent kind of retailer brands demonstrating best practice within the channel itself. We have an affiliate glossary, actually, which is something that we talked about for the original edition of this, because obviously... it's ideally a piece of content that is available for everyone, whether you're an advanced kind of experienced affiliate marketer and you're familiar with all the terminology, then there's still a lot of useful insight in there for you to kind of unlock. But if you don't know anything about it and you're unfamiliar with a lot of the jargon that necessarily kind of is associated with the channel, then the glossary allows you to kind of decipher a lot of that, I think, and hopefully make it more amenable to the newbies as well.
Do a bit of buzzword bingo, I'd imagine, as well.
Yeah, of course.
So what do you kind of hope to achieve by publishing this kind of thing, this annual guide to the industry?
Yeah, so the original objective was to actually try and provide a definitive guide to the affiliate industry from a global perspective, which is something that hadn't actually been done before. We, like Kev mentioned earlier, actually, when we were trying to research kind of the current state of play in affiliate marketing to try and understand how each of those local markets operates, we really wanted to see what else was out there in terms of published studies, reports, guides. And there was very little kind of information there. So I'm hoping that the Avon report will start to become at least a foundation for that kind of research, because obviously Avon's got insights from around the globe now, North America, South America, throughout Europe, and increasingly out in APAC as well, thanks to our partnership with Commission Factory. And so we're starting to get a real robust idea, I think, of how the different nuances that... occur in affiliate marketing in each of those regions, but also some of the commonalities. And that's kind of how the Avon report's been divided within. We've got country profiles for 11 of those different markets. Is it 11? I'm just trying to remember, yeah. Actually. 11, yeah. I was about to go start counting the chapters. But and then also 7 key themes that we identified as being universal throughout each of those regional markets. And they go some way to really characterizing the current state of play for the affiliate channel.
Yeah, I suppose it'd be interesting around emerging markets, especially, and see how those develop over the coming.
Yeah, and I think that definitely we want to have more of a focus on some of those markets that are the up-and-coming markets in next year's report.
Okay. So, Kev, then, I suppose this one's for you. Were there any unusual findings in your research of the global affiliate industry?
Well, I think that, you know, every market is different. It's always a challenge to try and put together a general guide when different markets are at different stages of maturity, and invariably they have evolved in their own way. But as Rob mentioned, there are commonalities globally that we see. I think Rob's also mentioned, you know, with our focus on Black Friday in this report, and I think that within that you see lots of really interesting variations and variances. I think probably the biggest outlier, if you like, is Brazil, where about a quarter of their entire November revenue is generated on Black Friday, which puts it significantly higher than any other market. And we do go into some detail within the guide about why that is. And, you know, that's a really interesting scenario for brands that want to succeed there, or, you know, want to export their businesses, because they know that there's this huge kind of e-commerce event that happens globally. But in Brazil, it's, you know, a really significant event. I mean, we also cover off Australia, so we have a separate section for Australia in this guide as well. And it was only really when we were researching this that we came upon their own retail event that they have, which doesn't exist anywhere else, called Click Frenzy, which also happens in November as well. So part of the narrative around Black Friday and Singles Day is actually how November is turning into this kind of uber discounting based or promotional led activity. Also, some really interesting variances as well within Singles Day, and about how the Chinese have actually turned it into something that's much, much more than just an e-commerce event.
Yeah, I mean, Singles Day is really interesting, and there is a dedicated section which is actually part of the new content for this year's edition that focuses in on both understanding what Singles Day is, kind of where it came from, its historical origins, and also looking at how retailers in China are using quite unorthodox marketing tactics that we don't see, I don't think, or aren't at least established in the West just yet. Doing things like that, they've got smart stores where the online to offline gap is increasingly being bridged. They have, some businesses have actually managed to incite greater spending from consumers by offering them swelling deposits, is the name that they have given to this initiative. So they basically incite customers to debit money with the brand prior to Singles Day, the actual event occurring. So it might be a month or so out, a couple of weeks out. And the more money that you pay in deposit in advance, the more money that, the more value that money has on the day. So it would be kind of a reward system almost. So I might put in £50 with a certain retailer in advance of Singles Day, knowing that because I put that much money in that far ahead, it then becomes worth £60 or £70 for me to spend on the day itself. So things like that I haven't actually seen being used elsewhere that do seem to be specific to the Chinese market, that I think are quite interesting tactics.
Yeah, I think that with Singles Day, it kind of presents a bit of a vision really about where Black Friday is going to have to develop, because we already know that there's a sort of significant amount of fatigue around Black Friday in the UK in particular. And I think that brands are really looking for kind of interesting angles. They're looking for stuff that is based around brand as well as promotional activity and sales. And it kind of feels like it's a very blunt instrument and not terribly sophisticated, Black Friday. And I think that brands will really want to latch on to stuff that makes it a more interesting experience for consumers. And Singles Day, as you mentioned, has some really interesting, has developed in a really interesting way. And with companies like Alibaba really wanting to push Singles Day outside of their core Chinese market, potentially not necessarily the West in the next year or 2 years, but longer term, then I think that it's something that either they force on us or we look to adapt our own events around. So for me, again, yeah, that really represents a really interesting vision about where potentially the channel might develop.
Do you think there's going to be celebrities launching Black Friday in the near future, on Singles Day?
Yeah, there could well be. I mean, who was it they had this year at Singles Day? There was Maria Sharapova, I think.
Yes, doing all sorts of like celebrities.
It was quite surreal. But I could well imagine it. This whole notion of retailtainment that they've got, this huge televised spectacle that they have around the actual event. I mean, it seems pretty well set up for our quite celebrity-oriented culture itself. So, yeah, why not?
So where can listeners get a copy of the new Avon report then?
So we do have digital versions, you'll be pleased to know, so you won't have to haul it around the big current print copy of the Avon report. If you go to awin.com/Avon report, there's a dedicated page set up there where you can download your copy for free. But you can also pick them up from conferences where Awin are kind of appearing. We have kind of sent copies out regionally, and in the UK, I think the next event is probably the Awin Code, which I'll touch upon a bit later, but that's in June. So we'll be bringing copies along there. So if you're coming along to that, then do drop by and pick one up.
Cool. And finally then, when is the next one due out, and what can we expect from it?
Next one's due out we're aiming for Q1 next year, so that'll be a kind of full year's worth of data again that we can kind of review and look over for the new patterns and trends that are emerging. I think next year's version will maybe take more of a local approach. So this year we pretty much we worked and collaborated with a lot of the teams in each of the local offices, and some by extension some of their partners, affiliates and advertisers themselves. But what I would really like to do is to get a lot more kind of on the ground perspectives from people operating in those particular regions. So whether that be through case studies, through more extensive interviews and Q&A's and things like that, I think that would be really useful.
You want to do Rob and Kev's world tour, don't you?
That's what I want to do. So finally, we'd like to open up this last part of the podcast to you, our listeners. If you've got a question you'd like to put to us on anything relating to the affiliate industry, then please do get in touch. You can tweet us at @awin_global with the hashtag #AwinTalks and then post your question to us. Or you can go to our Facebook page and message us there with your query, and we'll look to respond in the subsequent episode. But as this is the first episode, we're entirely questionless this time round, so please do get typing and we'll hopefully have some interesting questions to answer next time round. Before we finish today though, I wanted to let you know about Awin UK's upcoming affiliate conference this summer. The Affiliate Code is the name of the event, and it's being held in London on June 14th, where you'll be able to hear a wide variety of talks, including keynote sessions from Wired and Business Insider. You can find out more details about the conference on the dedicated page on the Awin site if you head over to the news and events section there. And that's it for this first inaugural episode. So I'd like to thank you all for listening and hope that you join us next month for another roundup of all the latest industry news and updates from the world of affiliate marketing. So it's goodbye from me, it's goodbye from Craig.
Goodbye.
And it's goodbye from Kev.
Goodbye.